Hello and welcome to this course on the role of storytelling in architectural practice. My name is Enoch Bartlett Sears and I'm the publisher of Business of Architecture. This course was originally recorded as part of the Business of Architecture Summit in 2014. This course is registered with AIA CES for continuing professional education. Credits earned on completion of this course will be reported to the AIA CES for AIA members, and certificates of completion for both AIA members and non-AIA members are available on request. The role of storytelling in architectural practice. Today's presenter is Collier Ward, AIA. Collier Ward is the founder of Thousand Story Studio, LLC, a commercial consultation and design firm. Over his 25-year career, Collier has always sought to clearly communicate the value of architecture. He runs a blog, Building Content, that evolved from an earlier how-to site for architectural bloggers to a platform for the promotion of architectural storytelling. Collier's secret sauce and consuming pastime is to supplant The Fountainhead as the iconic architectural novel. In this course, you'll discover how to use the practice of storytelling in your practice and how it can be applied to present your designs to clients in an engaging way. You'll learn about the historic scope of storytelling. You'll learn about the scientific basis of how we perceive storytelling. You'll also understand how to view and relate your practice in terms of stories. You'll learn how to use storytelling to engage your prospects and nurture your clients. And you'll also be able to go through a worksheet to help you define and coalesce your own personal origin story that you can use in your practice. So without further ado, I'll turn the time over to our presenter, Collier Ward.
It is dark all around. The forest behind you is closing in. You don't dare look back. Your eyes are on the face across from you, just beyond the campfire. The face is oddly orange, then black, flickering, its eyes wide, staring into the flames. It could be your sibling, or a cousin, or a childhood friend. It doesn't matter. This trusted soul is taking you to a scary place. You've been to this place before. You already know this story. But your pulse pounds in your ears, and your skin twitches as if it was the first time. You know what will happen when the door flies open, or when the necklace is snipped from the bride's neck, or when the coffin is finally sealed. You know this story, and you love it. Question: how many of you have experienced this scene before? How many of you experienced it just now? That is the power of storytelling. Storytelling has reached buzzword status in the marketing world. Storytelling advocates and practitioners are everywhere online. But what exactly is storytelling? And what is its role in architectural practice? That is what we'll explore this afternoon. First of all, storytelling is not make-believe. It's not once-upon-a-time fairy tales or kids' bedtime stories. Please, rid yourself of the notion that storytelling is kids' play. Storytelling, as we will consider it, is serious business. It has profound power in the world of commerce and in your design practice. Okay, to the extent possible, let's go through, see who's in this audience today.
Sounds good, caller. I can run I can run us a poll here.
That's what I meant. Thank you,
yep.
Sir. Thank
so you. I'll be running the poll. And this poll will come up on screen for those of you who are participating today. And I'm going to, it's going to talk about what your role is in your firm.
Yeah, please identify which of these best describes your position today. Are you a solo architect working alone? Are you a firm owner with staff? Are you a partner in practice with others? Are you an employee or are you a student? Most of what we'll cover today can be universally applied. When we explore the three primary stories, I will point out how a partnership's approach might be different from a sole practitioner. I'll tell how a student or an intern might also have a different focus. I'll point these out as we go along.
All right. Looks like we've got most of the responses here, so I'm getting ready to close down the poll. And you should see those results on the screen.
I don't see them. But
so I'll read them out to you. And you might want to make sure that you're still showing your screen. If you click the yellow, it's an orange button in the upper right-hand corner to open up your GoToMeeting control panel. And then there's a big play button that says show my screen. Make sure that that's pressed. But I'll read out the results here. It's possible that you're not seeing it. We have 54% are sole practitioners, 34% are firm owners with staff, and we have 6% who are partners in practice with others, and 6% are employees and no students today.
Okay, well, that's a good mix. And like I said, as we go forward, I'll try to customize some of this content. And Enoch, just over the course of the day, I realized that the sessions that are more interactive tend to be more engaging. I've got a monolith of information here, but if you see a question or if you have a question, don't hesitate to interrupt.
And, we'll do. Okay.
But anyway, here we go. Now, storytelling is not merely relaying events, and it's more than recounting random activities. Chats in the company break room are complete with anecdotes, tales, jokes, and gossip, and these have a place in our human interaction. But storytelling goes beyond these casual encounters. Stories hold a deeper meaning, and they reach a higher purpose, actually. In fact, storytelling shapes our lives. First, let's see if we can agree that storytelling has a profound impact on us. Consider these two aspects of how stories impact our lives. First, they frame our experience by setting up our expectations. For example, most of us grew up believing in Santa Claus. We expected presents to appear Christmas morning because that's what we were told. We saw it happen from year to year, so we told the story among ourselves. This was one of the most impactful aspects of our young lives, and it came from a storybook somewhere. That story framed our existence. Secondly, stories filter our existence. Back to Santa. He was supposed to enter through the chimney, right? Our house didn't have a chimney. I filtered out that fact in order to believe the story. A dozen aspects of my reality didn't align with the established Santa story, but I just ignored them. The story was too precious. Now, fortunately, my older brother broke the code and let me in on the secret. The Santa story is a simple example from childhood, but we still unconsciously experience life from the frame and the filters of the stories we believe. So, with your permission, I'll continue under the agreed premise that stories shape our lives. There's a lot of material online. There's a lot of material online about how stories affect us neurologically and psychologically, and how stories can be deployed in marketing. What I refer to as architectural storytelling takes the best of these ideas and builds on them. Architectural storytelling isn't merely architects telling stories. Rather, it's a unique way of making the stories interrelated. With it, we will take a design approach to this new skill of storytelling. This diagram should clarify what I mean. We will be looking at three primary types of stories from the current field of storytelling. Others teach these as separate entities, like tools in a tool bag, ready to be pulled out as the occasion happens. But I found it better to integrate these stories into a unified whole, where one builds upon the other. This diagram represents a practice that employs all three stories. It is a multi-story practice. Now, this slide comes from my notes where I was thinking through this three-tiered structure. It's found everywhere. Time has a past, present, and future. Stories have a beginning, middle, and end. Buildings have a floor, walls, and a roof. So why not compile our business stories in a similar way? Okay, storytelling, when done well, has the power to bring people into fellowship. It's the means by which we build community. And understand this. People will naturally try to see themselves in your story. They want to draw into your campfire. The forest is dark and foreboding. Connection and community are sought at a fundamental level. You know, it's a jungle out there, and people naturally want to reduce their risk. This is especially true when considering a major purchase, like a home or a commercial building. And as architects, we should provide every verbal clue that they've come to a good place. So, why is storytelling so powerful? Simply stated, it's because we are wired for a good story. Think of the campfire experience at the beginning. All I gave you was this still image and about 130 spoken words. Your brain recognized the beginning, the middle, and the end. It identified the characters. It responded to the tension and to the satisfying ending. Let's take a brief look at what researchers are finding out about our brains to explain this affinity we have for stories and storytelling. Mirror neurons were first observed in research monkeys. A mirror neuron is a neuron that fires both when an animal acts and when the animal sees the action performed by another. In other words, the neuron mirrors the behavior of the other as though the observer were acting itself. Similar brain activity has been observed in humans, too. In this sense, our brains experience what we see others do. The science is unfolding, but some suggest this is why we wince when we see someone scratch their fingernails along a chalkboard. Even hearing the fireside chat at the start of this presentation, parts of your brain placed you there at that scene. Not only do our brains mirror our environment, they release different hormones based on different stimuli. Let's look at two predominant hormones. Cortisol is the hormone associated with stress. When released, cortisol focuses our attention. The simple terms like dark, dare, closing in, and flickering in the campfire story, they were used to trigger this distress-focused response. The more distress we experience, the more cortisol is released, and then the more we focus on that particular stimulus. My word choice in the campfire tale was intended to help you focus, to draw you into the scene. Now, ghost stories are a voluntary and controlled encounter with cortisol. But what about a major project deadline? How about that story? That will send you in a cortisol-focused, stress-focused binge. Cortisol can be a bad trip. But fortunately, our brains also deal in oxytocin. Oxytocin is the hormone associated with care, connection, and empathy. The more oxytocin that's released, the more empathetic we will feel. In laboratories, correlations can be made between brain chemicals and behaviors. For example, within the controlled environment of an experiment, giving to charity is one measure of empathy. One experiment used a short animated video about a dad and his dying son. By monitoring the viewer's blood, heart rate, skin conductance, and respiration before and after seeing the emotional video, scientists were able to predict with 80% accuracy which subjects would give money to a charity associated with the story. Simply put, the story in the experiment was used to change behavior by changing brain chemistry. Further tests were conducted comparing the sad video and a similar non-emotional one in which the dad and the son were just hanging out at the zoo. In this set of experiments, digital scans identified the parts of the brain that were triggered by the emotional video. There was observable brain activity. Where? You guessed it. In the areas containing mirror neurons and the areas of oxytocin receptors. They lit up during the poignant video, but were inactive during the neutral video. There's a six-minute YouTube presentation of these experiments that you'll probably want to check out if this intrigues you. There's a link on the handout that Enoch sent you. The presenter in this YouTube video ultimately correlates the chemical response to the sad story with the classic dramatic arc that novelists and screenwriters are trained to follow. He even suggests that there is a universal story structure. He concludes that the dramatic stories can activate brain chemicals, which prompt us to behave in predictable ways. Anyway, that's just some of the emerging science behind the claim that we are wired for a good story. In addition to this scientific research, there's a wealth of thought on the topic of using stories in the marketplace. Several authors have tried to identify different types of stories from history and from literature and apply them to business storytelling. Some others have devised their own terms. I've synthesized a lot of the available material into the concept of architectural storytelling. For our purposes, we'll look at three primary story types that we will call the origin story, the brand story, and the client story. Now, each has its own definition, purpose, and benefits. And with some applied design skill, we can get these stories to stack. You can build one upon the other until you have a multi-story practice. Okay, let's begin by looking at the origin story. Again, in terms of architectural storytelling, this is foundational. Everything builds on this story. Think of Batman or Spider-Man or any of the well-known superheroes. You could probably tell me their origin story, how they were initially compelled to fight crime and save lives, where their unique strength and advantage came from. More than mere biography or backstory, the origin story takes on a mythological aspect. It reaches back to some difficulty or distinction, and then casts the character as bigger than life. He is who he is because of that event. Some marketers overplay the superhero theme and encourage brands to identify their superpower. Well, if you want to wear a cape, more power to you. But for our purposes, we'll focus on the realm of practical storytelling. Now, rather than hero or superhero, I propose we use the concept of legend. The differences are subtle. Hero implies passive waiting and watching, while legend inspires action. The term legend is also richer, multifaceted. A legend is a person, but the word is also synonymous with story. See how that works? And there's one last reason we're going to focus on the legend origin rather than a hero origin. Merriam-Webster defines a legend as an important person who is known for doing something extremely well. That's exactly how you want your prospect and clients to see you. So, without further delay, let's dig into our origin story. Now, the hardest story for most people to tell is their own story. You know, we live in a complex world of overlapping narratives. We identify with certain ones regarding politics, religion, our favorite football team, but others we fight against or simply ignore. We may unwittingly adopt the storylines that others tell, especially if they're people that we love or fear. But we are not merely the sum of these resultant forces. We are not the residue of other people's stories. But it may feel like this if we're not grounded. Everyone participating in this webinar is going to have similar education and training skills. We're very much alike academically and professionally, especially to our prospective clients. How can they tell us from the architect across town? Although our qualifications are similar, our lives are unique. Why did you become an architect? You know, this is a question I've been compelled to ask colleagues for years now. Have you ever asked or answered this question? All the times that I've made this inquiry, it was more than conference small talk or networking chatter. I unknowingly was trying to get to that person's origin story. Some of the answers have been profound, too. For example, there was this one. We were caregivers for my ailing grandfather. He was in and out of our rural hospital all the time. I made up my mind that sick folks need better spaces to recover in. Or there was this one. I didn't know a thing about architecture, but my guidance counselor, he was married to one. They recognized my artistic and analytical skills and shepherded me in the right direction. And then there was this late bloomer. I was flourishing midway through my mathematics studies, but wandered into the architecture building on campus. Man, I was captivated and eventually changed my major. Can you see that each of these personal beginnings holds the potential to be distinct? Why are you an architect? The answer to that question is most likely the place where your origin story will begin. Or it may go back to an illness or a struggle when you were very young. Or perhaps you were born in another country where you still have deep roots. There is something very distinctive about you. What is it? What is your origin story? Okay, you're not going to be able to answer that right away. At the end of this session, we'll take a look at some thought-provoking questions to get the ideas flowing. We'll also repurpose a generic about me statement into one that is legendary. How will knowing your origin story even benefit you? Well, first, it will help you to know yourself. You don't want to be that architect that's twisted out of shape in response to culture's competing and conflicting stories. You don't want to run along in the shadow of your client's big story. Knowing your origin story, recalling it, and living it, it will keep you grounded. Now, this may sound like pop psychology, but it is as tried and true as Socrates declaring, "The unexamined life is not worth living," and Shakespeare warning, "To thine own self be true." Your origin story will solidify your self-awareness. And second, it will help you position yourself. You don't want to be that architect that chases every technology and trend, or that poor soul that takes on unqualified clients and hopes to find the next great niche. Your origin story will help you find and maintain a well-suited place in the market. And finally, your origin story will help you to promote yourself. You don't want to be that architect who sits by the phone waiting for a job, or the one who just can't seem to network effectively. Your origin story will motivate you to be bold. The stories we hear and read, they shape our lives. But no story is more profound than the ones we tell ourselves. A revised self story can serve as a great reset, a new way to process old data. In your architectural practice, the origin story is the most personal, and it has the most potential to benefit you. I really believe that an authentic origin story will center you and ground you. It will serve as the foundation for all you do in your career. Next, let's look at the brand story. In terms of architectural storytelling, this is your second story. You develop this on the firm foundation of your origin story. Ultimately, your brand story is what others are saying about you. Now, hopefully your clients, your consulting engineers, your suppliers are all speaking well of you. That would be great. But maybe their messages are mixed. Maybe no one's telling your story at all. Don Draper, the fictional advertising genius, once said, "If you don't like what's being said, change the conversation." That is exactly what your brand story will do for you. With it, you get to craft the unified message that the public hears, and if it's engaging, it will spread. Let me make some points of clarification for the different architects in this audience. Now, if you're a sole proprietor, your brand story is pretty straightforward. It grows from your origin story. It's basically the story of your practice. If you're in a partnership, your firm's brand story will be less dependent on any individual origin story. Your combined brand story has the potential to be more diverse and wide-ranging if you're in a partnership. Now, please use this story exercise to re-examine your firm's position. See if developing a brand story will give new life and new focus to your marketing. Now, if you're a student or an employee, storytelling is different from that of a practicing firm. Please go ahead and establish your origin story. I believe it'll help you in the long hours of work ahead. Your brand is you, the student, or you, the employee. Work on your brand and make it distinctive. And students, interns, when you get to the client story, think of your professors or your employer as your client. Okay, now back to the crafting of your brand story. There are three components to your brand story. I think you can guess this: the past, the present, and the future. The past of your brand story is brief, pithy. It will probably echo your origin story in some way. It touches on a pain point from your experience, a problem that your brand can alleviate for your clients. Go for that. This is your firm's backstory, but it should speak to your motivations as well. Now, the present of your brand story is what you're doing now. It's the need that you're meeting or the problem that you're solving. In marketing terms, it's the brand promise that you offer prospective clients. Now remember, you want the audience to be able to place themselves into your story. Their brains are monitoring what you say for a reason to release some oxytocin, so give them a good story to connect with. Ideally, the present component of your brand story is captured in your firm tagline. Understand, if it's well-crafted, others will be able to identify with it and to share it. And finally, the future of your brand story should be aspirational. It should offer a hint of hope to the hearer. Someone once said, a brand story is never quite complete. So by hinting at a climax, but leaving it open-ended, your prospects and your customers can be drawn into the story. And that is what you want. For example, to say that you're an award-winning design firm is great. But what if you said, we are a design firm achieving more than awards? This takes the focus off your accomplishments, and this phrase has an upward lift. It welcomes others in. Remember the campfire. Well-chosen words will draw others in. You want people to be able to find themselves in the stories you tell. As I mentioned, each of these story types has its benefits. Here are three ways a good brand story can benefit your firm. First, it offers definition. It tells others what you do. Next, it offers distinction. It tells how you are unique. And finally, it gives a destination. It tells where you're going. Next, let's look at your client story. In terms of architectural storytelling, this is your third story. This tops out your previous story development. Where your origin is more personal and rooted in the past, and your brand story is more public and set in the present, your client story is the most engaging. It focuses on the future. Until now, all of these explorations we've discussed have been self-focused. But the client story takes all you've developed in terms of storytelling and turns outward to your prospective customers. The most important of the aspect of the client story is identifying the hero. In this story form, the hero is always the client. He or she is the one facing the greatest risk and potential reward. The client is central to this story. But wait a minute, you may be thinking. I'm the professional here. The customer would never get his house or his building built without me. Who wrestles with the code? Who manages the budget? Who keeps an eye on the builders and makes the tough calls in the field? The architect does. That's me. Shouldn't I be the hero? Okay, let's say that bit of dialogue was lifted from my private journal. You may already see Mr. and Mrs. Klein as the hero. That's great. But where does the architect fit in the customer story? Good question. Let me step out of the architectural realm for a moment. Joseph Campbell, the mythologist and the story expert, he identified a profound story structure that applies equally to biblical and mythological accounts as it does to current movies and films, the better ones anyway. Campbell devised the hero's journey as a way to look at stories of journey and discovery. In the hero's journey, the main character has an urge or a calling to leave what is known and comfortable. He's bidden to cross a horizon into what is unknown to him. He resists the call at first. There's just too much at stake. Then, specifically to assist the hero, a mentor appears, a guide. The mentor advises and encourages the hero, and the story proceeds. Now, in the client story, you are that mentor, that guide. You've been into the unknown, and you have returned. You know the way. You know the secrets. So the client is always the hero, but not without a mentor. Now, if you need a visual, there are plenty in the movies. Think of Mr. Miyagi with Daniel in The Karate Kid. Think of Morpheus with Neo in The Matrix. Think of Yoda with Luke in Star Wars. Miyagi, Morpheus, and Yoda, they were the essential guide without which there would be no hero. So in your next client meeting, picture yourself as Yoda. But please resist the urge of doing a Yoda impersonation.
Of this finished building, you will.
All right. In marketing, in your correspondence, and in your conversations, think of your prospects as clients. Think of your prospects and your clients as the hero in their own story. They have a lot at risk. A good story will expand their thinking. The story you craft for them will alert them to possible dangers and pitfalls, but it will also assure them that you've been over that horizon and returned safely and successfully. Just think how different and how refreshing this will be to a potential client who has only heard the same claims repeated over and over. Now, let's briefly touch on the three benefits of knowing your client's story. With a client's story, you can draw prospects in. Give a good story that will entice the public. Have your website and your email campaigns ready to go. A strong client story can keep them in. They'll be engaged. No one else is making them the hero. And when the time comes, these prospects will be converted by the client's story, and you can sign them up. With that, we've had a brief look at the three stories of the multi-story practice. Now, before we get into the mini workshop, let's take a quick look at storytelling in history. I'd like to specifically review historical storytelling in relationship to the built environment. I believe architecture and storytelling are forever linked. So let's see where the story and the structure have been merged through the ages. Cave paintings, the earliest ones found in Indonesia, are said to be 40,000 years old. They were simple hand images, but other famous examples often include animals or hunt scenes like this. These may have had a ceremonial storytelling component to them. The first written records were traced back to Egypt as early as 3400 BC and China around 1200 BC. Egyptian hieroglyphics were used primarily for government records, but histories have always been found. It is generally accepted that the oral transmission of history, which is storytelling, predates any written language. As with the cave dwellings, early cultures showed an affinity for merging their stories with their structures. This grand inscription is on a temple in Thebes. The Greeks developed outdoor public spaces dedicated to the presentation of their stories. Here we see another example of story and structure merged. The Romans lifted their theaters from the earth and gave them their own foundations. Scenes from battles and conquest were a feature of triumphal arches. This image of the Arch of Titus shows a military procession with the spoils from the horrific siege of Jerusalem. With the theater and the arch examples, we see the Romans carrying forward that architecture-storytelling relationship. Now, through these ages, the stories were similar. Tales of religion, myth, history, and the unknown. But each culture was unique and had its own unique stories, Plus, each culture found specific ways to retell their stories in or on their built environment. The Middle Ages saw Western storytelling transform and become more institutionalized under church influence. You know, against a background of wars and crusades and plagues, morality plays and Bible stories were performed out in the open. And of course, stained glass windows have probably become the highest form of architectural storytelling. In Persia at that time, the fictional Scheherazade saved her own life and became the queen by telling a series of 1001 cliffhanger stories. English storytelling reached rare heights with Shakespeare. His stories were, you know, they included histories, romances, comedies, and the Bard's work were famously aired in the Globe Theater, teaching and entertaining people in public. Explorers and settlers to the New World found what was likely the pattern of communities throughout time. Settlements where the power of stories was revered and the storyteller had an important place in the communal order. This has been a quick tour of history, showing how architecture and storytelling are linked. Okay, as promised, we're going to go back to the origin story for a mini workshop. Feel free to make notes as I ask these following questions, and you can refer back to these as you uncover your own origin story. Question one, what is unique about your place of birth or your family heritage? Do you have ancestry or cultural roots that make you distinctive? Question two, what was your first encounter with architecture or design or construction? What early influence moved you into this profession? Question three, what did you have to overcome to arrive at the place where you are now? And how might your experience of overcoming be used to engage new clients? Question four, who or what is your nemesis? Was there a professor who seemed determined to keep you from passing? A boss with similar motives? Now, keep in mind, your antagonist may not have been a person. Was paying for school particularly difficult? Have there been medical conditions or family situations that have hindered you? What about the recession? How have you overcome that? This isn't intended to be a question to generate a hard luck story. Nobody wants to hear that. But being vulnerable is a good way to draw people into your story. When your difficult experience can be leveraged to eliminate your prospect's pain point, that's a winner. Tell that story. Question five, what are you willing to fight for? And why is this personal to you? Accessibility? Sustainability? Preservation? What is the cause that you champion? And question six, who is your inner circle? Who knows your origin story and supports your mission? In the comic book universe, origin stories were tied to secret identities. Who do you trust with your identity? Who is on your side no matter the cost? This person or team may be part of your origin story. Think about these questions to see what naturally makes you distinct from the architect across town. Think about your current practice or your current position as a student or intern or employee, and see how connected or disconnected your daily work is from this unique beginning. Does your work flow from this story of who you are? Examine your life to draw out its inherent wealth, as Socrates suggested. Be true to yourself, as Shakespeare implored. Some aspect of the "why did you become an architect?" question should resonate with you still. Now, as I mentioned before, the origin story is your most personal. Some aspects of it may be used in your other stories, and that's okay. But it's okay if they don't. Again, consider the comic book treatment of an origin story. These were usually untold stories. Batman had a very small circle who knew his backstory. Sometimes your own personal story may be the only thing that gets you out of bed in the morning. Our profession has been hit hard the past 6 years. It's beginning to improve for some of us, but the prevailing narrative of our profession has been gloom and doom. You know, everything from stealing the title of architect or the angst over the dominance of certain star designers, even to the feeling that it will never get better. This is the new normal. You can get twisted out of shape by these harsh stories, and if you do, the cortisol will take over. Or you can craft a better story based on who you are and how far you've already come. Do that, and let the oxytocin wash over you. Your brain is going to mirror and respond to whatever it encounters, so give it something true and positive to reflect on. Lay the foundation of a great story, be legendary, and build your multi-story practice. Okay, let's go through a short case study showing how this all works together. We'll look at a fictional firm. We'll call them XYZ Architects. And we'll examine their website's existing About Us page. You know, every firm has one. We'll assume that the XYZ's principal has been questioned about it. He realizes that his online introduction is similar to many other firms, but not outstanding, not engaging. We'll see that XYZ's principal is challenged to develop his origin story, and we'll take a look at what he comes up with. And then to conclude, we'll read XYZ's revised About Us page, and we'll see how infusing some of his origin story actually improves it. Now remember, this is entirely hypothetical. Any resemblance to an actual firm and XYZ is coincidental. Here's what the potential client sees when he goes to XYZ's website. XYZ Architects is a full-service design firm focused on residential, commercial, and religious projects. We pride ourselves on listening to our clients and striving to meet their needs. Our regional design awards and repeat clients attest to that commitment. We are based in Capital City and are registered to practice architecture in the three-state region. Call us today for a free initial consultation. Now, this sounds familiar. It's promotional and professional, but it's not engaging. There's no story for the reader to find herself in. Here's probably the thought that went into this About Us page. They probably studied what the competing firms were saying, and they plugged in their preferred project types. They injected a humble brag about their awards, told where they practiced, and issued a call to action. This introduction is fairly standard in our profession. It puts the firm's strengths front and center, but it limits access for the reader. Okay, as we've determined, the principal of this XYZ Architects, he wants to be more engaging. He stumbles upon architectural storytelling, and he gets to work on his origin story. He recalls his first encounter with a construction project. You know, it's always been he's always been fond of the experience, but it never occurred to him how foundational it was to who he still is inspired to be. Here's what he writes. Here's his origin story. I wanted to practice architecture since I was a child, watching in wonder as a vacant lot was transformed into the neighborhood branch of our public library. Our family walks regularly took us by the site. The construction fence that appeared along the sidewalk was alienating at first. Some of my best discoveries were in that corner lot. Now I was shut out. But as the equipment and materials began to arrive, my feelings changed. Each evening there was something new to see. Dad was an electrical engineer and familiar with the process, so he answered my questions, and he asked me quite a few as well. As the building took shape, it presented many features I'd never seen. I still remember discovering the porte-cochere, the reading loft, and the central skylight. That library became a central influence in my young life, and I knew I wanted to replicate that wonder and that sense of place. This is simple. It's less than 200 words. But it has a beginning, a middle, and an end. It has opening conflict. There's a mentor figure to guide the young hero on. the narrator is transformed by the experience, and he's compelled to provide a similar set of experiences. It seems in the struggle to maintain an award-winning practice, this architect lost sight of why he was captivated by architecture in the first place. But he discovered something anew. His origin story is about youthful wonder, about delighting in the process. It's about having a building become an enriching part of his life. Ultimately, he might share the story with the client, but primarily it's a story for him. Let's see how the revised About Us page infuses some of the wonder, the process, and the enrichment that the architect uncovered in his origin story. The revised page looks like this. If our paths have crossed online, you are probably researching architectural design firms. We think that's exciting. Most people will never be in the position to need a new building. You may be one of the fortunate few, one who will see a new home or a well-suited business facility or a church that speaks to their faith. It is wise that you've come seeking information because designing and constructing such a building can be very involved. Perhaps you've come seeking a guide as well, someone to advise you and to work with you through the process. Welcome to XYZ Architects. XYZ was formed on a core belief that even a simple, humble building can enrich lives. We understand that in order to reach the ideal of a well-designed building, the process must be highly collaborative. Please review our residential, commercial, and faith portfolios for stories of how others have partnered with XYZ Architects. See, the reader is the focus here. He is wise and fortunate in his exploration. XYZ barely speaks of their own accomplishments. The achievements and the awards are elsewhere on the site. They're woven into the other clients' project stories. The tone is almost as if his father were answering and asking questions regarding the library project. This is by design. It captures the essence of this architect's origin story. Now, most of you could not cut and paste this into your website. Your marketing has to come from your own stories. So, in conclusion, I encourage each of you to begin to think in terms of architectural storytelling. Think of this exercise as a three-story building. It's a design project. First, uncover your own legend origin and develop your unique origin story. This is foundational. Eventually, you can develop a brand story to present to the public and a client story that will draw prospects in. You will be distinctly engaging in your multi-story practice, and you will be legendary. Thanks for your time. It's been an honor to share this thesis with you. I hope you see the role of transformational stories in your practice. So I've got to ask, what questions do you have about storytelling, architectural storytelling? Are there any questions? This concludes the American Institute of Architects Continuing Education Systems course. Thank you. Enoch, are you there?
I am here. Thank you very much. So excellent. And we do have questions here. So there's no worries there. We can.
Okay.
The question here is how do we go about crafting a psychological story that goes deeper to their brain? To the client's brain here?
Well, like we touched on, our brains are really sensitive to the things we hear and see, and it's really a matter of selecting the right words. A lot of good marketing will tell you to do a profile of your ideal client, and that's always a good first step. Try to figure out who it is you're trying to reach. You know, what are their pain points? What are their concerns? And if you can speak in terms of those, you'll just naturally draw them in.
Awesome. Awesome. Bruce says, thanks. This was helpful for firm marketing and website info. So that's great. I know having tried to come up with my own, you know, whenever I'm staring at that blank piece of paper for the About Us page, it's like, oh, geez, what do I say? You know, it's difficult. And having a framework like that, I really like what you mentioned about making it more personal, including our own personal challenges. I mean, that'll really help people stand out in the minds of the people that read their marketing materials. You never know, that might push it over the edge in terms of, you know, who they decide to go with. Go on, caller.
It's a lot like Richard was saying in the last session. We architects just do things because that's the way it's done, and nobody really thinks of getting out of the box. If you just go through and look at some architects, even the good ones, it's just it's a wall of what they've done, you know, the awards they've won, where they practice. And if you're like a church committee or you've got a business facility you need designed, you're just bumping up against those walls of who these people are. If it's crafted to engage the reader, you know, thank them for coming by, that sort of thing, if you can say things that will respond to their needs, it's going to go a lot further than just saying we're XYZ architects. I'm convinced of that.
Excellent. Well, since we are past that last slide, I can answer this next question, which is from Jess. He says, do you consult for this? And that's, of course, because the educational portion is over. So now we can discuss whether you consult. I guess you have a potential collaborator or a client in the audience here, Collier.
You say that was Jess?
Nope. Yeah, it was Jess. Oh. Jess. Yep, Jess.
Look, I don't have a book to sell, or I don't pay to do this. I'm fascinated by storytelling. Some of y'all that know me online, I've been an aspiring novelist for years, so I've been looking at the craft of telling a good story. I'd love to see more architectural stories, books, TVs, movies. So I've been doing this for a long time. If there's something I know that I can share with somebody, I'd love to get on the phone and talk it through. This time next year, I may have a fee, but I'm free right now.
There you go. Nice, nice. Well, there's his contact information. Go to 1000storystudio.com. Now, let's see here. Kenneth did ask, is there a more detailed overview or itemized list or process, a checklist of sorts, in the writing and creating this kind of story or narrative?
I don't have anything at hand. Again, if someone wants to email me and kind of give me where they're coming from, maybe I can help them craft that. There's not really bullet points per se. This is more craft. This is more art than science. Again, we're dealing with emotions. We're dealing with, you know, you might see a great movie and just be telling all your friends, and there's going to be someone that you tell is going, "That saw that movie and it sucked." So storytelling is very, very much a craft. It's not a science so much. But if someone wants to talk it over with me, I'll be glad to point them in direction. There's a lot of good material of people in the storytelling space. I'll mention a few names. Nancy Duarte is good. She's more in the presentation end of things, but she's done an excellent study of the shape of stories. She has an excellent TED Talk on that. So look up Nancy Duarte for that. And Michael Margolis, his website is getstoried.com. He's not so much about the presentation. He says his is more about presence. He really wants people to get into deep into the heart of it and know their own story. And I've drawn a lot of inspiration from him. But what I've talked about today, this architectural storytelling where you stack the stories, where you integrate the different stories, you know, that's pretty much unique. That's coming from my brain, not any of the gurus out there. But as far as steps or, you know, wanting a guiding hand, just call me or email me. We'll work it out.
Yep. Jess says sweet in all capital letters with an exclamation point. So. Luis asks, he says, this is a great framework for documenting a mission and vision for the firm. The concern I have is, how does one balance crafting something personal without being too revealing and oversharing? And I know this is probably a common concern as architects being licensed professionals. I know we're a little hesitant to be too casual, but what do you say to that?
That is a balance you'll have to strike. It kind of depends on what market you're in. Now, I'm in the Deep South. We tell stories. I have people tell me that all the time. When you schedule a meeting, just assume the first 30 minutes is talking about family. So that's how we do things here. So for me to be vulnerable or to explain, you know, how hard the recession was, that's not going to put anybody off. Now, in different regions, that might be. If you're dealing with a school board, they're not going to want to know that. You know, you have to be intuitive about who your audience is. That's the key all the time, is know your audience.
Yep.
But as far as striking that balance, you know, test it out. Just talk to someone that you trust in your mastermind, as we'll say, and get feedback, and then, you know, kind of test it out, and then you can and release it on the public.
Can you give out your email address for people that like to contact you directly, Collier?
Certainly. My website, which is going to launch next week, thanks to Enoch and Richard and Eric. My website is thousandstory.com, and my email address is collier@thousandstory, and that's C-O-L-L-I-E-R @thousandstory.com.